Velkommen til Hestedyrlægerne, en podcastserie fra Boehringer Ingelheim. I disse podcast taler vi med specialister inden for forskellige fagområder vedrørende hestens sygdomme. Alle har det til fælles, at de deler din og vores passion for heste. Velkommen til Hestedyrlægerne, podcasten til dig, der er dyrlæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Gorm Carson. I denne anden episode om stress hos heste taler vi videre med Gemma Persson, dyrlæge og specialist i hesteadfærd, om forskellene på akut og kronisk stress, om stress i klinik- og hospitalsmiljøet. Vi kommer ind på, hvordan vi som dyrlæger og veterinærsygeplejersker gør det nemmere for hestene, og dermed gør dyrlægebesøget mindre stressende.
That you sort of, if we take the spider example, I mean, I'm personally very scared of spiders, but that fear doesn't have an impact on my daily life, so to speak. It's only when I see one. However, would I live in, I don't know, Australia or a house where there's lots of spiders everywhere, that would probably make my stress levels be elevated even when I don't see them. And I think, there must be some sort of limit or threshold to where stress gets like detrimental for the everyday life. Or you know what I mean? That when it starts to affect your well-being in general. And what's the case here? I mean, can we always say that a horse that are lacking one of these Fs, for example, is suffering from this in their daily life or this stress? Or
yeah, that's a great question. So I guess what you have to consider is the intensity of the stress response, how frequently it's occurring, and the duration of action for which it occurs. So as you said with the spider, if you see a small spider that you can move away from and you only see it maybe once a week or once a fortnight and it's for a very short duration of time, that doesn't have an effect on your life. Whereas if you were seeing spiders that were perhaps, you knew they were poisonous and you were seeing them, you know, every hour, and they were, you know, around for long periods of time, then that's a much bigger stressor. And of course, there's no exact cutoffs for this. So we have to look at the individual horses. We do know that if we restrict the three Fs, the friends, forage and freedom, then that is always going to drive this stress response in horses. And it is going to have a negative impact on them. But they are all individuals. So some horses can cope with, say, for example, reduced turnout better than other horses. And I know it's been nice, actually, you know, at one stage people would say, oh, they're a dressage horse, so they can't go out in the field. And it's really nice now, certainly in the UK, we have Carl Hester, who has got, he's an Olympic gold medalist, that they get turned out in the field every single day. And one of his horses, Nip Tuck, he said, we try and have this horse living out in the field and just bring him in to ride it. Others would be out during the day and in overnight. So you have to look at the individual horses. Again, just be aware, because of this proactive versus reactive coping, that actually some horses look like they're coping, but they're not coping quite as well as we think they maybe are. And we also know from a lot of the farm animal literature, so at one stage people would say, well, the dairy cow must be doing okay. She can't have a very stressful life if she's producing so much milk. And actually, we know that that's not the case. Animals can still perform, and they can still perform to the highest levels, even if they have really stressful lives. So I think if they have no access to friends, that's always going to be a major problem. No access to freedom, that's, again, going to be a major problem. Forage, you'd never have a situation with no forage because they would quickly become emaciated. But reduced forage, is a problem. And the question really is the cutoff as to where that becomes a stress response for that individual. And I'm afraid there's no gold standard answer to that, but it probably is a linear scale. So for most cases, more turnout with other horses is better. At the same time, we do live in the real world. There are restrictions from a financial and a practical perspective. And, yourselves, you're the same as we are in the UK and certainly in Scotland. In the middle of winter, sometimes the weather can have a big impact on what we can and can't do with horses. So having a horse that lives out 24/7 in a field that's knee deep in mud is also stressful because there's nowhere for them to lay down. So that's a scenario where you would say, well, the horses have turned out for a reduced number of hours. Personally, my cutoff would be 6 is the absolute minimum that I like to see horses turned out for. But obviously 2 is better than none. And ideally, I like to get them out for more time than they're in the stable. But there may be times during extreme weather, and particularly depending on the ground you've got, where you say, well, we have to restrict it now, but they get more turnout over summer to compensate.
Mm. So as the stress, sort of the stress response, or how much it affects the welfare of the horse, it's individual. I mean, of course, we can state that there are common areas which should stress all horses, but it's the level is individual. How do we then recognize it? I think that's the key question, because if we don't recognize the stress, we can't really, we won't do anything about it, you know? So how do we recognize stress in horses?
So I think this is where we also need to consider the difference between acute versus chronic stress in horses. So acute stress is the easy one to spot because you get an obvious behavioral response to it. Now, as I say, that may be a freeze response and people sometimes miss that. The biggest thing I would say is just look for muscular tension, because we're all really good at seeing that. Even if it's subtle, you see the difference between when everything's nice and soft and relaxed versus where there's some muscular tension. And that's a really good indicator that the horse is a little bit stressed. Again, the acute stress response, the behavioural response is going to depend on the context in which they are in. But let's just think about the veterinary environment for a minute. The nostrils may become flared. The corner of the lip gets drawn back, which makes the lips look longer. The chin becomes more prominent. In some horses, it even starts to quiver slightly. The eye becomes wide. We see more wrinkles above the eye, and the shape of the eye changes. The ears have this classic, rotated backwards, sideways and downwards, kind of out to the side type response. The horse's head becomes higher. All of the muscles, such as the chewing muscles, become more prominent because of this muscular tension. The forelimbs become rigidly extended, and the horse will actually start to tip their pelvis underneath them, just the same way as a dog tucks their tail underneath them. If you look closely enough, you'll see a horse relaxed, and then with just a little bit of tension, the angle of the pelvis just changes slightly. So all of these things are pretty easy to see. And of course, that's probably more a freeze response than once horses are starting to fidget or escape, everyone can see those. The difficulty is chronic stress.
Mm.
So chronic stress is really, really hard to differentiate often from horses that are normal, unless it is extreme. So in the really extreme cases, the horse can look really dull. So they have reduced behavioural expression to things that they should enjoy and aspects like that. But a lot of horses with chronic stress will actually just look the same as other horses. And I think this is why, you'd go on to a racing yard where they don't turn the horses out, and they say, well, look, they're all stood, they're eating their hay nets, their ears are pricked, they come across and say hi to people, they're not stressed. But actually, we know that these horses are, because of the physiological response, because of there are other tests we can do as well, kind of behavioural tests. So if anything, I would err on the side of caution and just think, well, what's the best I can do for my horse? And as I say, we live in the real world. None of us are perfect. We don't all have multi millions of pounds or euros to be able to spend on different things. But just trying to think, we know this is what horses as a species enjoy. How can we work towards that to the best of our ability?
Mm. And so you, just to touch on the way to sort of measure the chronic stress, because as you say, they can mask it pretty well. Are there other options except for the behavioral? I mean, in research settings, there are cortisol tests and different sort of heart rate variability testing and such. Are there anything like that that we can actually do clinically or at home or, you know, outside of research settings?
Yeah, so to be honest, even in the research setting, that is quite complex.
Mm.
So cortisol, I think hair cortisol is something that may be useful because you can look at what's happened over, you know, long periods of time and look how it's changed. We do understand that, you know, cortisol is not a linear response to stress. And with chronic stress, you actually get blunting of cortisol. So you can actually have lower cortisol levels in a horse with chronic stress than in a normal horse. So at the same time, things like exercise, obviously it's a stressor in a good way. We also know that it releases serotonin, that it gives feel-good factors, but it would increase your cortisol levels. So that's really hard. Heart rate variability, we don't know enough about in horses yet. We're just starting to look at some of these things, but I don't think we have a good enough idea to do that. I think things such as QBA, so qualitative behaviour assessment, is probably going to be a great tool. And this is something, it is a behavioural test. Well, it's not a test. It's a behavioural observation. So we're rating potentially different emotions in the horse, and then it goes through some complex statistical tests in a computer and gives us an idea as to where that horse or that group of horses may be in terms of how they may be feeling. And that's been used a lot by the Donkey Sanctuary. They've actually got some really nice work now where they can show that things such as providing environmental enrichment to the donkeys has improved their quality of life. But unfortunately, there's no magic test or anything that's available at the minute. It may be in years to come that we look at things like brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Who knows? But I suspect, as with most of these things, it's not going to be a single test that we're going to be able to use. It's going to be looking at lots of different measures and then trying to form an opinion based on those.
If we move then from the yard or the stable situation and move into the clinic again, I mean, we've been there a couple of times already, but what can we as veterinary professionals do to manage the stress in our equine patients? You mentioned with the way situation, the way bridge situation, and I'm guessing it's a lot about sort of identifying situations. But what are your top tips to what we can do to help them manage stress and to make clinical situations less stressful?
Yeah, so I think what we need to do is be mindful of everything that we're doing with the horse. Horses aren't just learning when we go to give them an IV injection. They're learning and processing all the times they're interacting with people and even just being in that environment. So ultimately, what you want to do is you want to try and change the balance so you have more positives than negatives. Because at the end of the day, we are going to put needles in horses, we are going to pass stomach tubes, our endoscopes. You know, there are things that are invasive procedures. So we want to almost outweigh that by using more positive procedures as well. So, for example, we've already said giving a horse a scratch. And even if you just go out to give the horse a vaccination, you know, you normally ask the owner how the horse is doing, have a bit of a chat. Well, rather than doing that outside the stable door, why not use that time to give the horse a really nice scratch, find all of the best scratchy bits for that individual horse. So that horse is thinking, wow, I love this person when they come in. And then you give the injection and then you give them another 30 seconds scratch before you leave. The other thing to do is consider making things as minimally aversive as possible. So again, just be mindful as to how you can make things more comfortable for the horse. And people, I was certainly taught in the veterinary world, you know, or make it quick. If it's something painful, do it quickly. Mm-hmm. And I actually disagree with that now. I would say if it's something that's potentially painful, try and do it more gently for the horse. So even things like passing a stomach tube, I'll often just put my thumb inside the horse's nostril, just let them relax with that there for a second, put some lube on the end of the stomach tube, just pop it there. And to start with, I'll just inch it up millimetre by millimetre and go really slow, really gentle. If I've got a needle shy horse, so most horses, I, you know, just give them a scratch, but then inject them as normal. But I, of course, deal with a lot of horses that are very needle shy. And if I know this horse has already had negative experiences previously, I may use some local anaesthetic cream. It's not magic. It doesn't stop horses being needle shy, but it dampens down the sensitivity of the sensation of the needle going through the skin. So it helps. I'll use a smaller needle. So a blue, you know, even a 25 gauge needle, you can get an IV blood sample or give sedation through that. And using a really gentle, quiet, slow technique with your needle placement. And just thinking about everything you do with the horse, how can I make it as comfortable as possible for the horse to receive this? And then what other positive things can I do? One of the other things that came out again in my PhD was one of the most stimulating things for horses is the sound of another horse walking past. So again, we tend to be very busy. You know, we go into yards as and when we can, things are going on. And for most horses, that's absolutely fine. But if you have a horse that you know is fearful of the vets or has had previous bad experiences, then perhaps saying, well, we'll do that horse at the end of the day when all the horses come in from the field and it's relaxed, rather than saying, we'll do it at 11 o'clock when the other horses get turned out at 10 a.m. and this horse is the only one left in. And or, you know, doing it at a time when there's lots of other horses walking past is just setting yourself up for problems. So even if we've got horses coming into the hospital, if they're young or nervous, we'll stable them in a quiet part of the hospital and we'll have an older, quiet horse opposite them.
Mm. Yeah, lots that you can do, obviously. And as you say, just to sort of think about what we're currently doing and try to recognize the situations that can be potentially stressful, I'm guessing you'll come a long way. What is your opinion on calming supplements? Is this something that works or that we should use in practice or recommend to owners? Or what's your thought?
I'm fairly skeptical about them. I think some calming supplements seem to have some effect in some horses. And if they do, that is fine. I'm more than happy for owners to use them. Most of the time when we really dig down into it, there probably isn't any significant effect, but the owner feels like they're doing something because they're spending money on a nice powder that they can add to the horse's feed. I would like to see more placebo-controlled blinded trials on these supplements. And that, you know, like I said, there may be some effect in some horses. So we know that if you give high levels of magnesium, that has a sedative effect. So the magnesium-based ones, it may be that if you give high enough levels that, you know, it is having some effect. The ones that are based on L-tryptophan, that's obviously a precursor for serotonin. Now, the tricky thing is 90% of serotonin is in your gut. And we know in people with depression, they don't have reduced levels of serotonin. So it's more about the serotonin in the synapses in your brain and the receptors that they're acting on where the problems are. So personally, if I think a horse is that anxious, first of all, we need to work out what's motivating the horse to feel like that. and address the underlying factors. We also need a behaviour modification plan for that horse to help them change how they feel, the same as people now would undergo perhaps cognitive behavioural therapy. And then in a proportion of cases, I do think a psychopharmaceutical is beneficial. So using a drug which is going to reduce anxiety, we know that isoproterenol doesn't reduce anxiety, it blocks dopamine, so it doesn't have any effect on anxiety in horses. But things like trazodone, alprazolam, are really nice short-term acting anxiolytics. And again, there may be scenarios, you know, if you've got a young horse that lives out with other horses, it has a really nasty overreach injury and you've maybe put a cast on or you're just put a bandage on, that horse has to stop in a stable for that wound to heal. So that's where things like trazodone would be one of my go-to drugs to take away some of the anxiety and help the horse cope with that situation. But I tend to either not use these things or I actually used products which obviously they're not licensed in horses, but they are licensed in other species and have been proven to have efficacy rather than using supplements.
So I know that you have been doing, before we move on to the next topic, which is EGUS, to conclude a little bit, I know you've been doing some research on veterinary professionals and how good we are at interpreting stress and recognizing stress in horses. So what would you say in general, how good are we as vet professionals to recognize stress and to do something about it?
I think just the same as we're talking about, you know, what may be a stressor, there's massive individual variation in that. I do think as a profession, we have just become a little bit normalized to stressful horses. And therefore, we see horses in a mild to moderate stress response as normal. And we actually forget what a calm, relaxed horse really looks like. And that is achievable, you know, through using learning theory and behavior modification to get horses which are calmer and are much more relaxed. So there's definitely massive room for improvement there. But I guess this kind of comes back to the fact that if you detect that a horse is slightly stressed, then you also need to have something, some tools to deal with that. And that's where, you know, the work we've done using learning theory and retraining horses to accept needles or to accept veterinary care generally is really, really useful.
Tak fordi du lyttede til Hestedyrlægerne. Hvis du kan lide, hvad du hører, så glem ikke at trykke på abonner på din podcast-app, så går du ikke glip af nogen episoder. Du må også godt fortælle os, hvad du synes ved at skrive en anmeldelse. Vi modtager også meget gerne tips om kommende gæster og emner, og vores kontaktoplysninger kan du finde i podcastbeskrivelsen. Vi høres ved snart.